All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
You're listening to True Crime Feed. Welcome to True Crime Feed. I'm your host, Angela Ferrari, here to review the best true crime podcast from the past decade with a teensy bit of humor, plus my top three true crime picks of the week. Up first on the docket, a show from the archives I think you will really enjoy. Let's discuss the case for Wilhelm Reich, a.k.a. the sexy psychoanalyst versus the feds from Ridiculous History. Here's a quick synopsis. An Austrian doctor, once part of Sigmund Freud's inner circle, fled Nazi Germany to America, where he set up a secluded laboratory in Rangeley, Maine. There, he conducted experiments and researched the effects of orgone, aka sexual energy, by placing patients inside his controversial orgone accumulator. His publications on orgonomy and orgone energy manipulation devices were deemed so dangerous that the government issued a nationwide ban on all of his works and imprisoned the doctor. What was it about Dr. Wilhelm Reich's findings that led to one of the only instances in our nation's history of a government-led book burning? Ooh, I can't wait to see how this turns out. But first, if you want to take your listening experience to the next level, go to thetruecrimefeed.com and sign up for my newsletter where I curate visual aids to accompany the show. I'm so excited about the visuals this week. It's a crazy time in history. You'll want to see pics of our boy Wilhelm and his quintessential mad scientist haircut, plus photos of all of his nifty inventions, including the orgone accumulator or his cloudbuster gun used for battling alien spacecrafts. Yeah, we'll get there. So it's been a funky, kooky couple of weeks. We just had the total solar eclipse viewing here in Maine, which attracted many visitors to the northern part of the state, including one of my favorite places, Rangeley. Home to gorgeous lakes and beautiful mountains, I spent a lot of time in Rangeley as a kid. It's a really special place, but it also has some pretty kooky vibes going on. It's not uncommon to hear about UFO and cryptozoology sightings from the locals. And I'm not just talking about Spectre the albino moose. I'm talking unexplainable, otherworldly phenomenon. But these strange sightings have not deterred folks from gravitating to Rangeley. President Teddy Roosevelt liked to hunt and fish there. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow was a Rangeley reg, as well as actor Kurt Russell. As familiar as I am with Rangeley, I only ever heard a few mentions here and there about Wilhelm Reich and his Orgonon lab up on the hill. I recall my Nana trying to tell me about the guy once and his research into sexual energy in what turned out to be a very awkward conversation. But other than that, I knew zilch about Reich and haven't thought about him in years. Until this week, all the solar eclipse hubbub up in Rangeley jogged my memory about this mysterious Maine laboratory and the scientist whose work caused such a commotion. So I went to my boys Ben Bolin and Noel Brown from the podcast Ridiculous History. Their show will often intersect with true crime. It's quintessential edutainment. And they did a solid overview of Wilhelm Reich in a two-part series with a heavy focus on his early psychoanalytical work. They don't really rock the boat. They like to give you a nice, straightforward delivery. I found it to be a great jumping-off point so I could do a further deep dive into all the wacky shenanigans that went down in my home state of Maine. But before we get up to the North Woods, we need to zap back to 1897. To a little village called Dobrynich. At the time, it was part of Austria, but now part of Ukraine. This was where baby Wilhelm was born and raised to parents Leon and Cecilia Reich. Leon was a farmer, and the family struggled financially, so eventually they had to move to Cecilia's uncle's house for a better opportunity doing cattle farming. His parents were both Jewish, but Papa Leon was very much against raising Wilhelm Jewish and would punish him for speaking Yiddish or associating with other Jewish kids. Leon also sounded like a very violent and jealous man, especially when it came to his wife. And things got really tricky when a 12-year-old Wilhelm walked in on his mom banging his tutor. Wilhelm was beside himself, not sure what to do with this information, but he eventually chose to confess the affair to his father. Wilhelm would regret this decision for the rest of his life. The violence between Leon and Cecilia escalated until she took her own life when Wilhelm was just 13 years old. Despite his father's severe personality and limited resources, Leon was very supportive of his son Wilhelm's education and career aspirations, sending him off to a German gymnasium where he could study the classics. But then his dad died of tuberculosis when Wilhelm was 17. He was left penniless at that point, but managed to scrape together enough money to finish school. Oh, and then the Russians invaded his homeland and he was forced to flee. So now Wilhelm Reich really, really had nothing. And to make matters even worse, he was dealing with terrible acne due to psoriasis. Of all the things that went wrong in his early life, dealing with a poor complexion really plagued him. Wilhelm made mention of it quite a bit in his journals. It's probable that his struggles with psoriasis set him on the path to study the connection between the body, the mind, and emotional well-being. But before that journey, Wilhelm enlisted in the Austro-Hungarian army for 3 years during World War I, quickly rising up the ranks as a lieutenant in charge of a 40-man platoon down on the Italian front after Italy pulled that whole switcheroo on the Austrian-German alliance. Because the secret ingredient to any Italian military strategia is betrayal. Mwah. Anyway, even though Wilhelm's side lost, he made it out of World War I in one piece and attended the University of Vienna. He dabbled in law and medicine for funsies, but then was introduced to your boy, Sigmund Freud. Over his summer break, again just for funsies, Wilhelm Reich read nearly all of Freud's published works and got his approval to start psychoanalyzing patients, even though Wilhelm was only 22. And soon, Siggy Freud invited him into his inner circle, aka the Vienna Psychoanalytical Society, where the beards were big and the egos were enormous. I also noticed a glaring pivot here when it came to Reich's dating track record. It seems like his new position gave him a boost of confidence. I read that as a first-year undergrad, he was very self-conscious and had many unrequited loves, including one gal he fell hard for while the two were lab partners dissecting a corpse. I know, so hot. But then once Wilhelm became a psychoanalyst, suddenly Reich got game. Plus, it was a great way to meet women. Old Willie started dating one of his very first patients, a gal named Laura Kahn, until she tragically died of sepsis in 1920. Did I forget to mention the residents of post-war Vienna in the 1920s were living through famine and bitterly cold weather with little fuel to heat their dwellings? It sounded brutal and hard to imagine people still dating and carrying on forbidden affairs in these conditions. But carry on they did. 2 months after Laura Kahn died, Wilhelm started hooking up with her best friend, another one of his patients named Annie Pink. Annie's dad discovered the affair and insisted Wilhelm marry his daughter. So they did. And now, newlywed Willie was out there crushing it, able to crank out a combined bachelor's and MD degree in just 4 years, and making money for the first time in his life. He was also making significant contributions to the field of psychoanalysis, especially when it came to the role of sexuality in mental health. Reich made the astute observation that people in post-war Austria were a little repressed, and perhaps a bit of physical touch would improve their bad toots. I know, it seems kind of obvious now, but this was groundbreaking stuff at the time, and made Wilhelm Reich a darling in the psychoanalytical society. For a while, anyway. He slowly started to deviate away from Freud's traditional methodologies. We know he was a line crosser right from the jump when it came to the ladies, but it was also quite controversial how he manhandled his male subjects. The common method under Freud at that time for treating patients went as follows. Patient lays on the couch and rambles about their mommy issues. And the psychoanalyst sits in a chair positioned behind the couch out of sight, silently stroking his beard and taking notes. But not Reich. He would sit in a chair across from his patients and have a back and forth dialogue with them. Sometimes he would even hold their hand or put an arm around their shoulder. Reich started to notice that many of his adolescent patients, both male and female, were very sexually confused. Many of them had no idea what sex even was. They just knew they had certain, let's say, urges. So Wilhelm Reich took it upon himself to advise patients about safe, healthy sex and birth control, much to the chagrin of his colleagues, who thought he was grossly overstepping by openly talking about sex with his patients, especially the unwed female ones. But Reich was growing more and more progressive when it came to sex. Over time, he came to believe that human sexuality had far more purpose than for just procreation. He believed that it generated energy, a life force that had the power to liberate humans from the emotional plague that was spreading across Eastern Europe. Reich's unusual theories began to alienate him from the society to the point where he was outright feuding with Freud. Freud was pretty conservative in nearly every facet of his life, and Reich was getting more and more radical to the point where even the Marxist leftists were like, yo, this whole sexual liberation might be a little too liberal. They all had no idea just how radical Wilhelm Reich could be. By the 1920s, Reich was really into this idea that the uninhibited orgasm had the power to release emotional and physical tension in the body. He called this energy orgone, and would diagnose patients based on their orgastic potency. Achieving a high orgastic potency was the ultimate goal in life, the key to everything, optimal physical and emotional health, and the only way to separate you from your ego to connect to your deeper spiritual self. Also, he didn't believe in monogamy. Shocker. After having 2 kids with his wife Annie, followed by several affairs with other women, the two were divorced. Less of a shocker. Although I found one detail kind of surprising. Despite how sex positive Wilhelm Reich was, he detested pornography. He thought it commodified sexuality and objectified women, contributing to a distorted view of sex and intimacy. By the late 1920s, Reich fancied himself the, quote, prophet of the better orgasm, and also the founder of genital utopia. His following grew, and so did his list of enemies, aka prudes and incels. With all these followers and haters, Reich was basically living the 1920s version of a hashtag influencer, which means going on glamorous trips all around interwar era Europe. First, Wilhelm Reich spent several weeks in Switzerland, in a tuberculosis sanatorium, where he nearly died. When he became well enough to travel once again, Reich went on a fabulous lecture tour all around the Soviet Union. Ooh, how exotic. During this time, he became disillusioned with the Communist Party. but maintained his beliefs in social and economic equality, studying the link between poverty and mental health. Reich was very passionate when it came to advocating for the poor. After the lecture tour, he returned back to Vienna, where he opened 6 free clinics that specialized in sex education, counseling, and handed out contraceptives. All 6 clinics were overwhelmed with poor and working class people looking for help. On top of that, he had a mobile clinic. Old Willy Reich would drive around in a van handing out sex ed pamphlets and contraceptives to teenagers. Probably couldn't pull that off today, dude. In 1930, Wilhelm moved to Berlin and set up his own publishing house so he could whip off more sex ed pamphlets to widely distribute to the youths. And speaking of youths, Reich started dating a young dancer named Elsa Lindberg. This was another great time in Reich's life. Things were going great until that whole Hitler coming into power thing. Reich, being of Jewish descent, fled to Germany with Elsa, then bounced around Scandinavia for a while, where he developed his own methodology of psychosexual analysis called vegetotherapy, wherein, let's just say, he got a lot more handsy during his sessions. Reich would have his patients lie down and start physically touching them while talking them through their deep-seated traumas to release tension from their bodies. And yes, oftentimes this would result in the patient having an orgasm. From everything I read, I couldn't find any documented instances of Reich touching his patient's genitals. To me, it sounded more like modern-day massage or Reiki therapy. My guess is people were just so pent up back then that it didn't take much. Just a little shoulder squeeze and a few kind words and, you know. I mean, remember how everyone lost their minds 30 years later when Elvis was on TV shaking his hips, or when the Beatles were singing about holding hands? Teenage girls were fainting. The zeitgeist when it came to sex was just so different back then. And the vegetherapy was the last straw for his remaining colleagues. Wilhelm Reich was now completely alienated from the Vienna Psychoanalytical Society. But instead of tempering his views, Reich went full-blown mad scientist, teaming up with Norwegian physicist Harald K. Schjelderup at the University of Oslo. Here, Reich began experimenting with biosystems and their electrical charges, believing that human orgasms had the power to produce electrophysiological discharges. He would hook up patients to an oscillograph and study their electrical output. Yeah, student volunteers would make out and touch each other while Reich watched the needle go berserk. Talk about an easy A, am I right? Up top! But once again, here in Norway, Reich was making enemies. Plus, things weren't going too well in his personal life either. He was having multiple affairs with patients again, but Reich was also very jealous of his longtime girlfriend Elsa, even going as far as physically assaulting a male composer he thought she was getting too close with. So between his growing enemies list, the mounting scandals in his personal life, and the rise of the Nazis, Reich decided it was time to skedaddle, and in 1938, he moved to the place where he could truly be himself, you know, wave his freak flag with pride. New York City, baby! Reich started a lab at the New School, where he started banging his lab assistant, Ilse Ohlendorf. The two got married and had a son named Peter. And here's where things start to get really weird. Reich takes that whole sexual energy experimentation thing to a whole new level. Reich would study single-celled organisms, then eventually lab rats, putting them into Faraday cages, boxes made of conductive material that could block and or redistribute electromagnetic fields. And I don't want this to turn into a full-on episode of Bill Nye the Science Guy, but basically Reich claimed he was observing the presence of orgone energy in certain healthy living organisms because they would emit a blue light when put in the Faraday cage. And if that organism was unhealthy, let's say a rat that had cancer, Reich would observe the emission of red light, which he associated with antimatter or lack of orgone energy. And if you want to get more into the nitty-gritty particulars, look up Wilhelm Reich and the Bayonne experiments, okay, nerds? Because us cool kids want to talk about sex, baby! Because Reich goes on to build human-sized Faraday cages, aka organ accumulators. His patients would sit inside them, usually naked, and these machines would supposedly concentrate the patient's organ energy and heal their various ailments, including cancer. Yeah, I know, but a lot of people took Reich and his work seriously. Even Albert Einstein entertained his theories. Reich and Einstein met at Princeton and swapped ideas. Reich even sent Einstein an organ accumulator to test. Einstein and his assistant did observe an increase in temperature inside the machine, which Reich claimed to be organ energy, but Einstein concluded, in layman's terms, that things get hot in a box. Einstein's dismissal did not deter old Willy Reich. He doubled down on the curing cancer claims, which lost Reich his position at the New School. Wilhelm continued his animal and human experiments at his apartment in Queens. That is, until his neighbors complained. After a few calls to the authorities, Wilhelm Reich was arrested and his apartment was raided by the FBI. This coincided just a few days after the attack on Pearl Harbor and Germany declaring war on the U.S., Reich was suspected of being a German Nazi sympathizer after the feds found a copy of Hitler's manifesto Mein Kampf and books by the famous Marxist Trotsky. Wilhelm Reich was detained for 3 weeks until his release, but kept under close surveillance, remaining on the naughty list as a possible enemy alien. Now that the heat was on in NYC, Reich needed to go off-grid. That's when he made his way up to Rangeley, Maine. He bought an old farmhouse fixer-upper on 175 acres and rehabbed it into a world-class laboratory-slash-observatory-slash-conference-center-slash-vacation-home with two cozy cabins for guests. The place is truly gorgeous. I have photos in this week's visual aids. The building is this modern, international-style architecture constructed with natural stone, blending in beautifully with a lovely Northwood setting. For a dude with some kooky ideas, he's got great taste in home design. And Wilhelm Reich named his gorgeous compound Organon. By the year 1950, he was living there year-round, able to conduct his experiments far away from the prying eyes of the government. And experiment he did, man, homeboy took some big swings. While up in Rangeley, he started to believe in the presence of deadly organ energy, or DOR. And this DOR was the root of all maladies. Not just in small living organisms, but the whole environment. Desertification was a growing problem in the U.S. Farmland was experiencing prolonged periods of drought. And Reich chalked it up to deadly organ energy. But don't worry, you guys, because he also found a way to combat it. An invention called a cloud buster. Essentially a series of pipes connected to water that he'd shoot into the sky to make it rain, y'all! Again, sounds pretty out there, but there are versions of this type of geoengineering that are successfully used today. And according to the Bangor Daily News, back in 1953, there was a high drought in Maine that summer. So a couple of blueberry farmers hired Reich to do some cloud busting, and what do you know? The rain started falling that very evening, yep. Reich was also continuing his organ accumulator experiments up in Rangeley. Many young students came to volunteer to work at his lab. And along the way, he divorced his second wife and married his third wife, Aurora Carrere, but not before having an affair with a married woman slash patient whose husband was a fellow psychotherapist and professor at Harvard named Myron Sheriff. And Sheriff would later become William Reich's main biographer. Are you following? Whew, who knew the love lives of mid-century academics could be such a telenovela? Because Reich also had a steamy affair with a gal named Lois who ran his publishing house called the Oregon Institute Press, which disseminated Wilhelm Reich's work all around the country, including a book called The Function of the Orgasm. He even began commercially producing small, portable organ accumulator devices, shipping them all around the country because sex sells, baby. And Reich had a lot of happy return customers. That was until the federal government stepped in. This was a total witch hunt, in my opinion. I'll concede that yes, telling people orgasms could cure cancer was misleading. But I mean, not the worst way to go out, right? Well, the FDA disagreed with my hot take. FDA inspectors started showing up unannounced at Reich's compound in Rangeley and eventually filed a complaint seeking a permanent injunction with the goal of stopping all interstate shipping of orgon devices and promotional literature. Yeah, dude. And this resulted in one of the only instances of the U.S. government banning and burning books. They wanted all materials published by Reich or any materials that mention the words orgon energy and all orgon energy accumulators destroyed. There was a literal book burning in New York City overseen by the FDA where several tons of Reich's literature went up in flames. This set Wilhelm Reich off. I mean, he had been through his fair share of betrayals before. The Italians pulling the switcheroo back in World War I, his feud with Freud, the persecution of the Jews in Germany. He thought that he had escaped the fascism, left it all behind. But now his life's work was being destroyed here in America, the land of free speech. So, understandably, he had a bit of a meltdown. Reich started to think that the entire planet was attacked by UFOs who would spread DOR energy in the sky. He claimed he saw several cigar-shaped crafts hovering over his compound in Rangeley. His son Peter would later recount watching the sky from their telescope in the observatory and spotting mysterious aircrafts. Then he and his father would race outside and combat the UFOs with cloudbusters. Wilhelm insisted he knocked a few of those crafts right out of the sky from his compound in Rangeley, Maine. He also went to Arizona with his cloudbusters to help their farmland droughts by day and fight interplanetary battles by night. You know, I can't say for sure if these cloud-busting battles saved the planet from evil aliens, but I can tell you this event was the inspiration behind that awesome song and music video by Kate Bush called Cloud Busting, starring Donald Sutherland as your boy, Willie Reich, and Kate Bush wearing a really weird wig and pretending to be Reich's son. Please, I beg you, stop what you're doing right now and watch that video. Just the last 2 minutes is all you need. I'll wait. Right? Isn't it awesome? Kate Bush was definitely Team Willie Reich. Unfortunately, the U.S. government was not. Wilhelm Reich got caught, well, technically it was actually his assistant, shipping part of an orgone accumulator through the mail over state lines, which was a violation of the federal injunction. And it was an FDA agent posing as a customer who requested it. Such BS. And because of this, Wilhelm Reich was thrown in jail with a bail set at $30,000. But he had a lot of supporters who posted his bail. Wilhelm Reich represented himself in court and made several arguments that pointed to wide-scale conspiracy, saying that the government wanted to silence and steal his ideas. And at this point, I gotta say, like Kate Bush, I am Team Reich. I'm certainly not a full-blown tinfoil hat person, but I will definitely rock a saran wrap headband. And this whole thing reeks of conspiracy, plus it took place during the whole J. Edgar Hoover era. Talk about someone who needed some healthy sexual therapeutic healing. The judge ruled that Wilhelm Reich and his close associate, Dr. Michael Silver, were both guilty. Reich got 2 years and Silver was sentenced to one. And right after the guilty verdict, FDA agents arrived at Organon and Rangeley to oversee the destruction of the orgon accumulators. They couldn't do the destroying themselves, so they supervised Wilhelm's son Peter, ordering him to chop up the 3 remaining devices with an axe. Peter did as he was commanded, but then draped an American flag over the rubble. So metal. Reich's number two, Silvert, he served out his sentence and then 5 months after his release, committed suicide. Reich was transferred to a federal penitentiary in Pennsylvania, where his mental and physical health deteriorated. He was observed having fits of paranoia and delusions. And the prison guards weren't helping. He was referred to as the flying saucer guy or the sex box guy. Wilhelm would write to his son how devastating each day was, but he could find moments of comfort after having himself a good cry. Same, Wilhelm. Same. Reich was very much looking forward to his upcoming release on November 10th. But on November 3rd, 1957, Wilhelm Reich never showed up for roll call and was found dead in his bed. His cause of death was later ruled to be heart failure. He was 60 years old. Wilhelm Reich was buried in Rangeley, Maine, on his Organon property. None of the former universities or institutions he worked with acknowledged his death, though many of his former colleagues at the Organon Laboratory went on to have successful careers in psychoanalytics. And Reich's work had a profound influence on modern-day Gestalt therapy. And at the time of his death, there were also several out-and-proud Organ Accumulator owners/users that included Catcher in the Rye author J.D. Salinger, On the Road author Jack Kerouac, and your boy Sean Connery. Yeah, that totally checks out. Wilhelm Reich had a complicated connection with women. I mean, dating your patients/lab assistants is certainly frowned upon today. And he had a thorny relationship with his two daughters from his first marriage to Annie, who had a very successful career as a psychoanalyst in her own right. His firstborn, Ava, followed in her father's footsteps, becoming a physician. She was a full-blown believer in her father's work and helped to carry on his legacy after his death. His second daughter, Lore, named after his first wife's best friend and first patient that he had that affair with. Needless to say, she had some complex feelings when it came to her dad. Laura also became a physician and maintained a relationship with her father up until his death, but felt his conclusions were a result of mental illness. In 2011, Wilhelm's son, Peter, gave an interview about his father, saying, quote, "He didn't practice science in the way scientists do today. He was a 19th century mind who came crashing into 20th century America and boom." I agree with that. I think in a lot of ways he was a product of his time and in other ways way ahead of his time. A sex positive person that maybe took things a little too far. Like Cardi B. Yo, imagine if he was living today and put Cardi B into an Organ Accumulator. I think the whole thing would erupt like a blue volcano. Fun to imagine an alternate universe where Wilhelm Reich was able to continue with his work uninterrupted. Would Organon Rangeley have turned into an all-out Branch Davidian-style cult? Or would all of our cars now be powered by orgasm-generated energy? Talk about revving the old engine, am I right? Haha, down low, don't leave me hanging! Bazinga! Wow, I feel like we really went on a journey together. I came out feeling mostly pro-Reich. How about you? I mean, of all the dumb tech startups and crypto schemes that exist out there, I'd rather invest my time and money with the founder of Genital Utopia. At the very least, support him on Patreon. Ooh, but I think I found something even better. That Wilhelm Reich's 157-acre property up in Rangeley, Maine is now a museum, complete with a full trail system. And the place was newly restored in 2023. So what do you say? Should we go? Turn on the old Organ Accumulator once again and bust some clouds? Let me know. Tell me your deepest, darkest thoughts on Wilhelm Reich. You can email me directly at angela@thetruecrimefeed.com or join the True Crime Feed Facebook discussion group. Keep an open mind and be kind to fellow True Crime Feed friends, even if they don't fully buy into Orgone energy. It's all right. I don't blame you for being skeptical. But hey, it doesn't hurt to experiment. Stay tuned till after the break to hear my top three podcast power ranking of the week. Hey you. I'm so glad we found each other and get to share our special love for True Crime podcasts. I don't ever want you to miss out on a wild story. That would be a crime in itself. So be sure to hit that follow or subscribe button on your podcast app and share your favorite episode with a friend so the next time you see each other, you can splurge about your latest true crime obsession. Thanks for spreading the word, and now back to the show. And we're back. Here are the three shows currently trending that I think are worth a listen. I present to you this week's podcast power ranking. At the number three spot, we have Murder in the Hollywood Hills. Here's a synopsis from the show page. Christy Johnson was shopping at a mall in Los Angeles when a man invited her to a photo shoot for the next Bond film. That afternoon, the 21-year-old got into her little white sports car and drove to the shoot location up in the Hollywood Hills. She was never seen alive again. In Dateline's latest podcast, Keith Morrison takes us to the city of dreams for the story of a smooth-talking predator who lured young women into a nightmare with the promise of fame and fortune. That is a series wrap on Murder in the Hollywood Hills. This was one of the better Dateline originals with a very satisfying final episode. It was quintessential Keith Morrison doing what he does best. It boggles my mind that he has the ability to do these hard-hitting interviews sitting across from killers and still sprinkle his storytelling with these folksy little idioms about carnivals. An engaging binge from start to finish with Murder in the Hollywood Hills. At the number two spot, we have Serial Season 4. Here's a reminder from the show page. Serial returns with a history of Guantanamo told by people who lived through key moments in Guantanamo's evolution, who know things the rest of us don't about what it's like to be caught inside an improvised justice system. Okay, so if you were like, man, Guantanamo was such a freaking joke, this latest podcast episode is only going to confirm that opinion. A former U.S. military interpreter is suspected of espionage, so the FBI accompanies him on his honeymoon to Lake Tahoe. Yes, a total waste of resources, but I argue totally worth it in terms of audio entertainment. When you tune in to Serial Season 4. And at the number one spot, we have Beyond All Repair. Here's a rundown from the show page. Imagine you're accused of something horrific. You swear you didn't do it, but someone says they witnessed it. Your own brother. Sophia Johnson was newly married with a baby on the way when she became the prime suspect in her mother-in-law's brutal murder. Host Armory Stevenson re-examines a case unsolved, a family torn apart, and the woman who wasn't believed. I hate loved this episode because it completely shook me, changed my opinion. I won't spoil it, but oh my god, I don't know what to think now. I just need you all to listen to this show ASAP and come talk to me about it, because the only thing I know at this point is that I am completely freaking enamored with host Armory Stevenson and Beyond All Repair. Now for my miss of the week. We have Hookergate. Here's a summary from the show page. Truck stop brothels run by a web of ex-cons, a Commonwealth attorney wasted on whiskey and power, protection exchange for cash and flesh, and a brash local reporter exposing it all. Dr. Lindsay Byron is an excellent historian slash author with many accolades and talents, but dramatic narration is not one of them. Oh my god, this is so bad, it's almost kind of amazing. I actually think you should listen just for like a few minutes to hear this full-blown fiasco. The case selection and the story structure of the show are honestly pretty decent. But the host's, theatrical reenactments completely tank this thing. I'm not kidding, this show would sound less ridiculous if they hired Elmo from Sesame Street to narrate it. So Hookergate, I can't make it through a full episode, but you're too good for the trapdoor, so I'm putting you on the trophy shelf of spectacular failures. I think you'll fit in well up there, right next to Scamanda. Find out next week if Beyond All Repair will remain in the number one spot as the series continues, or if a new show will swoop in and take its place. Let me know what trending shows are in your top three, and what show is on your spectacular failure trophy shelf. I'll meet you back here next week to dust off another superb true crime show from the archive for your next feeding fix. That's all for today's True Crime Feed. Don't forget to sign up for my weekly newsletter, where I post links to my top three favorite shows of the week and bring you fabulous visual aids for every episode. Be sure to follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook to join the conversation. And if you enjoy this episode, please leave a review and tell your fellow partners in crime to tune in to True Crime Feed. Thanks for riding along and allowing me to be your audio accomplice. Join me next week for another feeding.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.